Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to Fet Life Station Internet Radio. This is Life Without Parole, LWOP Radio. I'm Stacey Mandel. I'm in Philadelphia, where it's definitely still a Philly thing. And I co-host the show with Robert Groves, aka Reentry Rob. Rob is about 27 years down on a life without the possibility of parole sentence, serving at SCI Phoenix. So Rob is actually going to call in twice today. We'll hear him twice. And in the meantime, we have a pretty interesting lineup. This morning, we're first going to be speaking with Mr. L. Sawyer. L. is a filmmaker and a social justice advocate, a formerly incarcerated individual. And after L., we'll be speaking with Mr. Charlie Bassett. And then we'll hear from Mr. Carol Blackwell. Both Charlie and Carol are also serving life without parole sentences inside of Phoenix. So without further ado, we'll get into our show.
Morning, L. How are you?
Good morning to you. I'm well. And I'm well. How are you?
All is well over here. All is well over here. I bought some flowers for my pots and I'm happy.
Nice.
All right, so why don't we get into it? If you would be so kind, if you could just tell us a little bit about who you are and a little about what you do.
Who am I? I'm a father. That's most important. I'm a husband. Who am I? I'm a son. Yeah, good question. Who am I? I like to think of myself as a filmmaker, entrepreneur, business person. I'm an advocate for like a justice advocate, and I like to think that I use my life to fashion my experiences as a tool for liberation, and I think. That's how I would define myself, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing. Can you tell us a little what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a filmmaker because that's the sort of easiest way to describe it. But it's less about film so much. It's, you know, part of it is film, but we do, it could be everything from very short pieces to longer full-length feature films, mainly documentary, but you know, I'm also a consultant. I do a lot of thought partner sort of work with institutions and governments and organizations.
So I know one of the documentaries you've done is called Pull of Gravity, which I watched.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
Yep.
Okay. So, I had to ask you some thoughts about that, but go ahead.
And I wanted to see if Rob could watch it. I don't know if he can watch it. I asked him, and I didn't get an answer from him. Do you know if he can watch it in prison?
I don't think so, but I think they actually probably play it. If he's at Phoenix, I'm sure they have it.
Okay.
I made sure all the institutions had copies of it.
Okay, well, we'll follow up on then. But maybe you could just tell a little bit about Pull of Gravity, and how it illuminates, you know, a certain message for audiences everywhere, really.
Yeah, no, Pull of Gravity is a film that I did, me and my co-director, John Kaufman, did. We started in probably 2011, and we completed it. The first version was 2013, and then we did another cut in 2015. That film was amazing. It was a thought that I had a while, you know, there was a thought I had a long time ago prior to that. And about how to create imagery or capture imagery, if you will, that depicted the environments in which people are coming home to, the realities in which people are coming home to from prison, go to prison from and back to. And in that film is about 82 minutes long, and it depicted basically one intersection in North Philly, or two, it's like 12th and Huntington and 10th in Cumberland. And in that film, we documented about 15 people that were incarcerated. It's been about 10 years now, and of that 10 years, around, I think, 11 people that were interviewed for the film have been killed since, all by gunfire.
11 of those 15.
11 of the 15. Yeah, it's a memorial. That film is truly a memorial. That's my neighborhood. That's family of mine, friends of mine that you see in the film. It even shows my home being raided by police and, for no reason for 5 hours. They searched my home with dogs at the time. So, you know, that film is a memorial to me. And it went on. It was funded in part by the Department of Justice, Eric Holder and President Barack Obama, in connection with the Eastern District of Pennsylvania Department of Justice. At first, you know, I had the idea to do it. We did it with a thought that it was going to have a basically short run throughout Philly and a couple other places. And I ended up seeing it about 450 times across the country. And in other countries too. So we took it overseas. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Can people watch it now?
Oh yeah, it's on Prime, Amazon Prime, and it's a couple other places. But inside institutions, it's pretty much readily available. It's not prisons.
Okay. We might get back to Pull of Gravity, but I know Rob's calling in a handful of moments. You're also on the board of the Decarceration Fund.
Yes.
So can you tell us about that organization and what it does?
So Decarceration Fund was a fund started by this gentleman named Chris Bentley. And Chris Bentley, Chris Bentley and Joel Stryker, they basically were founding sort of partners in a member of what they call social impact investing funds. Good Company is one of them, and there was another one called Fast Forward. And Fast Forward was something that happened in Philadelphia in 2014 in partnership with Bloomberg Philanthropy in the city of Philadelphia. And me and my partner John applied, and we took this training called Fast Forward, which is basically entrepreneurship and investing training. Which was a wealth of information. Up until that point, I was a business person, I guess, doing work for money, but I didn't understand the concept of economics and the concept of investing and fundraising and that kind of thing, capital.
Yeah.
And all that. So
I think I need that.
Yeah, we all do. I'm a proponent of everyone needs it, and to, at least to understand what we're up against and or how to leverage or what they call scale our initiatives. So basically, I took that sort of fast forward, which was basically like a master's class on investing, and I gained a number of amazing mentors as a result within that space. Investors, some giants in that space.
But can you tell us yeah, too about the name Decarceration Fund?
So later on, years later, Chris basically came up with this thought, based off of the social impact world. And basically, the social impact world, one of the biggest things have been, you know, with respect to how much funding and money goes into the carceral state, right? Mass incarceration is a money making initiative, right?
Yes.
Like, that's just what it is. It's a decarceration fund, is basically an initiative to counteract that and to support and give. It's a, if I'm mistaken, I think it's a $20 million fund, basically set up to invest in companies that are working and building and scaling products and services that work against the
yeah.
You know, status quo with respect to institutes. Say, give an example. Like, there's a number of you know, businesses, cottage industries that are go to support the you know, incarceration or the carceral state. So there's, for instance, like if mail, you can't mail directly to an institution anymore. So basically, mail will go to another place to be distributed back, which is basically Xerox copied. Even photos are Xerox copied and sent back into institutions. Those companies that do that secondary sort of cottage work, they're making a lot of money, but they have no social conscience to that space. So what we do is basically fund to give support to companies, by and large, companies you know, initiatives that are led by folks with lived experience with incarceration, right? So you know, so basically,
so everything you fund, it's somebody who has been incarcerated previously.
Folks that are doing work in that space that is doing work to alleviate the carceral state. So there's a number of organizations or companies that have products that nobody on the staff has been incarcerated at all, has no connection to it. However, what they're doing is a social conscious alternative. Give an example. There's this one company, I'm not going to say the name of it, but basically has a text message service that basically, currently there's text message services being employed by parole or being employed by the, you know, court systems and stuff like that. If you're on child support or different other things, you need to show up for court. So there's the courts will have a text message service. Well, that text message service that you have to add to your phone, it's an app you have to add to your phone just so you can get alerts about your court dates and the like, basically do geo-tracking so they can actually track you. So there's a company that came out with the same service that does not geo-track, so geolocate.
Right.
So basically, now that person and his company...
So, Elle, I have to interrupt because I've got Rob calling in. Hold that thought and we can finish it maybe with Rob, okay, or after Rob. Don't go anywhere, everyone. I'll be right back right after this. Hang on.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me.
Hello, Life Without Parole listeners. We are back, and I've got reentry Rob on the line. Hey, Rob.
How you doing? Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Elle and I were just talking a little bit about what he does with the Decarceration Fund, and he was specifically talking about the various industries that actually support mass incarceration and how the Decarceration Fund supports not only individuals who were previously incarcerated to invest in them and their ideas and their perspective for change, but also industries that are working against the status quo model. So that's where we left off. So I just want to give you that context.
Okay. Mr. Sawyer, it's cool if I call you Brother
Al? Oh, man, please. Certainly.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for taking the time, man. Come on the show, man. Now that all the listeners, you know, and know exactly who you are, and they're aware of what you've accomplished in life, I kind of want to go back to where it all started. You served time at the infamous SCI Greaterford. Is this where, you know, you discovered your passion, fulfillment?
Sort of. Yeah, that's where I discovered film as an option. And yeah, I did 8 years at Greater Fort. You know, but really quick story is that, you know, the reason I even started doing film, you know, inside the institution, there was a video crew, internal video crew. And I never wanted to do film, nothing like that, you know. I had about 2 years in on an 8-year sentence, and I was stabbed while I was there. I had a son at home. It was really hard to communicate with my son. So basically, I, you know, at one point, I just didn't think I was going to come home. So basically, what I did was I got on the video crew, worked my way onto the video crew, just to use the cameras. And the only reason I wanted to use the camera was just to send tapes home to my son. It was a sort of like, if you will, not to be dramatic, but it was a sort of like suicide note for real. And it was that serious, right, at the time. So, you know, I used the cameras. I did. I sent 10 tapes home. But at that time, while I was on the video crew, there was this guy, a filmmaker, coming into the institution named Glenn Holston. And basically he was coming in. And they asked, he was a filmmaker, he was documenting this artist coming in, and they told him he couldn't bring a film crew with him or cameras. He had to use the internal video crew, and nobody on the crew wanted to be his crew. I said I would. And as soon as I did that...
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and...
Yeah, no, as soon as I said, I'll do it. Like, I just wanted more time with the camera. It wasn't like I want to be a filmmaker. I didn't even think that was an option. Like, legit, I didn't think I was coming home. So basically, as soon as I met him, bro, it was all to the races. Like, he just, like, breathed life into me in a real way. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, and I give credit not only to him as a resource, but I think it goes unnoticed that it was my old his Haroon Daoud Shakur that literally made me understand who he was and how to adapt my thinking where I was and my mentality to what resources he could be for me. And that goes unstated. You know what I mean? It's a thought of these folks from outside, basically, and all these resources was kind of life-saving piece. Yeah, that was true. But if it wasn't for my elders that understood me mentally where I was at and can adapt it to him, I wouldn't be here. You know what I'm saying? So.
And that's crazy that that's basically, and you covered it, you know, my next question was, you know, were there any positive influences in your life during your incarceration that pushed you into this positive direction? And you kind of nailed that. And it's crazy that you would say that, because when I first came down, I think I came down in 99. I think you left by the, you, I think.
No, I left in 03.
209.
I was gone by that. Yeah.
So I remember, and when we talk about positive influence and being led in the directions and having that direction just manifest into something else, my brother Marco Maldonado, I'm pretty sure you know him. Move your head.
Of course, move your head.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I first came down, I remember I got this trade certification when I was up top, you know, in electronics. When I came down here, I remember him saying, he said, listen, bro, you're going to write in the library. And I was like, I said, I ain't going to write in the library, bro. I'm just getting down here. You know what I'm saying? And then he was like, no, there's a reason why. You know, you're going to be around a world of information. You're going to be around some good brothers. It's going to be conversations that you're going to be able to, that you're going to want to tap into. And just from that point on, it just threw me in a direction where I was around the law books all day long. And then at this time, see, now we got this reentry program within the facility, right? The RSO. Now it's called the Reentry Service Office. And at that time, since I was working in a library, it kind of threw me in a direction where people were coming in for resources, and we didn't have staff at the time to go ahead and take care of that. So I was the dude that actually was just like bringing
this
up
is a call
over
from
to the actual
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This
call is subject to reporting and monitoring.
Before they go home, and now, you know, I'm reentry robber within the jailhouse.
Years later, you got a position.
So, you know, it's crazy that you said that. I wanted to ask you, how did your jail experience shape you, you know, into the man you are today, though?
Good question. Well, I think it was the exposure, right? Again, like I say, it wasn't the jail at all. That jail was horrible. You know what I'm saying? It really has an unstated, like, maiming on human beings, man. You know, and I can get into that later, but the idea is that it did provide me with access to elders that I didn't have at home, you know. So I had family members that wasn't that great for it. I had a lot of people that was, you know, just kind of airing out in the street. But for me, I was up under Haroon and Daoud. You know, I had I had a good lineage of folks that literally just wouldn't let me fail. So it's to the day, bro, I've been home 20 years and this past January, right? Right. And in that, and even today, thank you, and even to today, I still ask myself, what would Harun and Daoud do? I just talked to Daoud 2 minutes ago. But I still ask myself, what would they do? You know, like I still, like, you know, and the information they gave me, even though I've seen worlds that they would never, they have never seen before, there was some basic fundamental math that they gave me that was applicable across worlds. So, yeah, so that access and that time, and that's another thing, too, is the one thing that prison did for me. It made me understand who I was, right? Like, you know, you use your imagination, and we live in these. And while you're in prison, you basically can slip off into these imaginary worlds, and that's a superpower that nobody speaks about. You understand what I'm saying? In psychology, they call it disassociation disorder. But for us, that's a superpower for us. So I can still do that now. And majority of the folks that come home, when I talk to about that are successful or not, still do that now. And that when you can lock in and know yourself in and out, can't nobody tell you who you are. You understand what you're capable of because you've seen it already. And there's things I've accomplished that I imagined back then. You know what I'm saying? And there's a different understanding and appreciation for it. So it definitely gave me the ability to dig myself in a way. But it also, you know, that comes with its own you know, damages and stuff as well. So, yeah.
So I think there's a difference, though, but between, like, having a passion or, like, having a hobby, but actually having that, turning that into a career. So it's like, how did you manage to take, like, you know, that emerging skill and go home? First of all, you needed a shot. So, like, who gave you your first shot? And, like, when you first came home, how did you able to take what you've gotten in greater for as far as that skill and turn it into what you're doing today?
All networking. And again, the one main thing Harun and them gave me was the ability to talk to people. And that's it. If you can talk to people, you're game over. Right? Like, game over. Because again, if you can talk to people and you can communicate with people like you're doing, that's the whole world is about communication. That networking is it. It's not money, right? It's not none of that. It's about networking. Because if you can network, then every world, there's a saying, a quote, that is really important. I want everybody to know this quote. It says, for every new world equals a new worldview equals a new brain.
Wow.
You understand? And there's some math to that, but just it is. Every new world makes for a new worldview, makes for a new brain. So the idea is that when you leave the penitentiary, right? When I left the penitentiary, my penitentiary thinking wasn't going to make it in this world out here. People don't realize that. But it takes a moment to take a knee to be able to then expose yourself to the next world. You can gain a new worldview to give your brain a chance to adapt and turn into a new brain to fit, you know, into this space. So what happened for me, again, Glenn, the filmmaker who came in and taught me film, he was my original network. I've been home 20 years. I've never filled out a job application. I've never had a job. None of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, none of that, right? So, but I haven't had to because I was in the company of folks that may not necessarily look like me at all, but I can communicate enough to make sure I'm in a space, right? And then I can then adapt to that space. And the other thing, again, I keep talking about Harun Daoud, which is important. They taught me about what networking is. And people network like they're looking for charity, right? That's the wrong way to look at networking. Networking is you network in a way to find out how you can apply yourself to that network, how you can be a service to that network. Right. He had a saying that says money goes where it's treated the best, and networking goes where it's treated the best, right? So the idea is like, you know, if you're likable enough and you can communicate and you can apply yourself in different worlds, oh man, you ain't got no problem, bro. But what happens is we're not taught and told about networking. People come out here thinking that somebody owed them something, and they network in a way that they're basically looking for pity. And that pity is fleeting, bro. You understand? It's not look out for you, and not a little bit, but if you don't make something out of those little bit of, you know, things, then nobody's going to keep coming back to that. You know what I'm saying? So, again, people aren't patient with you out here. That's unfortunate. But at the same time, it's like we have to be able to know how to communicate, network, know how to apply ourselves to that network, and then grow on from there. You know what I'm saying? There's folks like Wallow, they come home, they don't really give, you know, communication with us, you know, provide much service to him when he came home, and look at him now, right? Like, and there's tons of folks, there's countless folks that all they need is some guidance and some plugs, and they may do on it, but there's probably equal number of way more that I looked out for that just completely flopped. You know what I'm saying? And never even, you know, and it's not due to nothing else other than their lack of ability to adapt and adjust out here, you know, and it's not their fault. Like, it's a big step. Or some people come home and get with women or get with situations, and they're literally now putting on the burdens of their people out here on them when they should be trying to fly. You can't fly with a weight on you. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm sorry, I keep talking, but go ahead.
No, you're good, but I want to segue right into this guy. I have two questions left that I want to go ahead and get out of the way, and it's crazy that you were touching on it already. Those who have been released and have managed to gain a level of success, right, in your opinion, how important is it for society to know, you know, what could be done with second chance? You've kind of tapped into it because you got people such as myself and thousands of others. I'm not an anomaly. There's other people that are trying to do the same thing that they're in here. Not only working towards bettering themselves, but helping others do the same. So how important is that visual confirmation, you know what I'm saying, for you, such as yourself, to let the world know, yeah, I was once incarcerated, but look at me now.
No, it's very important, but I think so here's the thing. You know, people always look for this exceptionalism piece, right? I'm not exceptional. My support system is exceptional, right? The fact that my support system is lenient and forgiving.
Right.
That's exceptional. Bro, I messed up so many times out here, bro. You know, there's no straight lines in nature, bro. You know what I'm saying? So there's no straight lines. You know, and the idea is like the level of what would be, I hate to use the word success, that I have now, you know what I'm saying, is only in the past 10 years. Before Polar Gravity, bro,
you have 1 minute left.
So it's like, you know, I had people that were forgiving and nurturing to me. But it's really important for people to see success stories and people that gave to folks to ensure that they're successful.
And I got something for that, and I'm hoping that this is within this network, and this is why I'm going to be back with you. I'm going to definitely be getting back with you because I'm not sure if you were privy to check out the Grow's Notebook, you know, and that provides the scriptural compass we're talking about. And also, LY provides that audio transformation. So I hope that this is something that you'd be willing to use in some type of short film document or anything to go ahead and just bring us some type of exposure, man. You know, I would really appreciate just having the conversation with that, man. Yo, thanks for your time, L, man.
Yeah, thanks for your service, man. Bro. Keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate it, man. And LY Radio, man, thanks for tuning in. Same time, same place, same fight, man. God bless to all. Stage hold us down. L, thanks again, bro.
Peace to you, sir.
Thank you for using.
Bye, Rob.
Securus. Goodbye.
So, this is Life Without Parole Radio. I'm Stacey Mandel, and we're going to take a quick musical interlude, and then afterwards, I will have Charlie Bassett on the line from SCI Phoenix, and we'll hear why Charlie's on then.
Who you could be. Just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on, I'm going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, I'm going home.
Hi, Charlie. How you doing? Welcome to LWAP Radio.
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
I am well, thank you. So, it was great that Rob thought to put us together because this show is really about highlighting the talents and skills in prison, you know, that the general public would otherwise have no idea exist. So I'm really, really happy to have you on.
Thank you. I'm excited as well.
Can you just tell everyone a little bit about yourself, starting maybe with your sentence, please?
Okay. I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak today. In 1991, I was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. I was eventually convicted. When I was convicted, my trial judge told me that my life was over. And when I stepped into SCI Greater Fort, the judge's sentiment was echoed by many prisoners there at that time. I was told that I had nothing to live for, that I had no incentive to do anything positive or productive. And at that moment, I knew I had one thing left, and that was a choice. I can buy in to all the negativity, or I can embark on a journey to better myself and to do productive things. I chose the latter. Early on, I became a certified paralegal. Later, I joined an organization that is Temple University Inside Out Think Tank. This is an organization of men and women inside and outside of prison who work towards bringing solutions to social issues. I'm also a member of Right to Redemption. And Right to Redemption is a group of men and women inside and outside of prison who advocate for establishing parole eligibility for individuals who are serving death by incarceration, otherwise known as life without parole. So I spend my time here mostly as an advocate. And that's just a little summary of what I do.
Thank you. So tell us a little more about that choice that you've made, and in particular, can you talk about like this skill that you have that you may have discovered and developed while you're in prison?
Yes, yes. I discovered the wonderful world of writing.
This is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
I've written 3 novels and self-published myself. I wrote a couple of stage plays, which were produced in theaters in the city of Philadelphia. And I'm currently working on a movie script. And hopefully, with funding, I can get that movie made and show the public, show society what I was able to achieve by being in prison. And everyone knows that prison, if you think about prison, what prison is every negative attribute that you can think of. So what I did, and going back to that choice, I made the choice to educate myself, to become that writer, to highlight my skills and present this to the public. And the work I have submitted so far have been well received.
Well, I want to give you the time to talk. I can't help it. I have to say, it's like almost like the choice I hear, you know, and from talking with people between just drifting with the environment that you're in. And when you're in that kind of a dark environment, like you said, you talked about, I guess it's that choice, or you turn inward to yourself and find yourself, refind yourself, come back to yourself. Okay, let's talk about you more. How about this the writing? So is there a particular when and where that your love for writing started?
Okay, that's a funny story, actually. And this is a very long time, 2 decades ago.
Okay, but don't make it a long story, because you know we're going to get the hook soon.
This is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Well, I'm going to fast-track this. 2 decades ago, I was in a law clinic with a good friend of mine. And he had a manuscript that he was reading. I didn't know what it was at the time, and I asked him, I said, what are you reading? He said it was a movie script. I had 2 thoughts. Number 1, why are you reading a movie script? Number 2, how did you get a movie script in prison? And I asked the reader, he let me read a few pages, And at that moment there, I knew what I wanted to do. And prior to that, I had no desire to become a writer. And that's how I started on my journey of becoming a writer, by reading that movie script. And I believe the title was New Jack City.
Love it. So in this chaotic setting, how are you staying mentally focused when you're writing and trying to write new material?
To be honest, I have my good days and I have my bad days. Basically, I use my writing as fuel because I believe that one day my writing will be a component in me getting out of prison. And I believe that it's taking me around the world. And so I muscle through the tough times, the stressful times. And when I start putting my pen to pad, I know it sounds like a cliche, but I basically zone out. And it's like therapeutic.
Yeah. So do you have specific listeners or a demographic that you're trying to reach through the writing? If you do, do you have an overall message?
I was told that my writing is basically targeted towards women. However, if it is, it's done unintentionally. I don't have a demographic that I target. I just write. I don't have a genre that I prefer. If I'm feeling humorous, I write something funny. If I'm feeling serious, it's drama. And I let the emotion dictate what I write on a particular day.
Cool. So Rob's, performed in several skits for Man Up, that mentoring organization called Man Up. When I first met him, he told me all about it, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Are you guys going to put your talents together and maybe work on something in the near future?
Absolutely. I'm aware of Rob's talent, and one of the things that I wanted to do is collaborate with an individual here. And when I learned that Rob was a writer as well, putting skits together, this is an ideal match. He and I coming together and creating something amazing where we can touch the population here and hopefully inspire others to become writers, become actors, and take that talent outside of these walls and barbed wire fences.
I'm going to be first in line to come.
We'll be waiting for you.
If you're in the same jail as Rob, then I know that you've probably been made aware of the Groves Notebook, the Facebook page. Are you currently on that site highlighting these talents in particular?
I'm currently preparing my portfolio. I will be on that site.
Aha.
I think it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. It is like a God sent for us in here to highlight who we are, put our bios out there where individuals in the public can go on a site and look at a guy who's incarcerated and read his bio and discover, oh, he published books. Maybe you, someone on the outside, maybe they picked up a book that was written by someone in here and never knew that this person, this author, was incarcerated. So this is one of the things that the Groves Notebook provides for the public. And I definitely will be a part of it.
I'm glad to hear that. And I was going to tell you, don't talk it up too much because people think you're just using your dramatic writing and acting talents. But sounds like you're being for real, right?
I talk like I talk.
Yeah. So is there
any...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One of the things that I wanted to add is that being incarcerated, sometimes whatever prison that one resides in, that prison might not provide the necessary tools more information that an individual needs to develop their talent or to even discover any hidden talent. So it's important for us in here who are incarcerated to always self-reflect and discover who we are and what talents and what skills that we have, and work on being our very best self. And that's what I try to do.
Thanks for explaining that. Yeah, it's important for people to hear and to understand. Charlie, we are out of time. It was a pleasure.
Can I close with one thing?
Sure.
I want to say that I'm very proud of my accomplishments, but what I'm most proud of is my service. Like I told you earlier, I'm a part of an organization called Right to Redemption. And not only do we advocate for establishing parole eligibility for lifers, we do a lot of service. We provide resources and money for children events, the homeless, families in need, and so much more. And that is what I'm most proud of.
How many years have you served already, Charlie?
32 and 1 month.
Okay. Well, I think this interview with you in, I don't know what it is, about 12 minutes we've got here. I mean, there's a lifetime in these 12 minutes. So thank you for articulating yourself the way that you have.
I thank you for this opportunity to be able to talk about myself and talk about the things that I've done and the things that I look forward to. In spite of the fact that I am incarcerated, in spite of the fact that I'm serving a sentence of death by incarceration, also known as life without parole.
You have 1 minute left.
Well, we are doing our best to get your voice and everyone else's voice who's deserving like yourself out there to the airwaves. So we're going to get cut off. Thank you.
Thank you. Have
yeah.
a good one. Take care.
Take good care, Charlie. Bye.
Absolutely.
The caller has hung up.
Please don't go anywhere, Life Without Parole listeners. We're going to take a short musical interlude, and we will be right back.
Just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. Alone. Just hold on, I'm going home. Oh, oh, oh. I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. Alone. Just hold on, we're going home. Oh, oh, oh.
Welcome back. This is Life Without Parole Radio. Stacey Mandel here on the line with Rob, reentry Rob Groves. Hi, Rob.
Good morning, Stace. Good morning, Stace. Good morning, all our listeners. What's up?
Oh, we're having a good show over here.
Oh, yeah,
we entertained.
Yeah. Catch me up. How was your interview with our brother Charlie?
He's special. He's really special. It's amazing. The talent, you know, that's in prison. And it's not even that. That's, you know, like Elle had said before about like not being extraordinary or exceptional. Use the word not being exceptional. It's not so much like that I'm shocked because there's talent or people have exceptional skills. It's more just there's no other way to know about, you know, people's natural born. Yeah.
So it's like I think that, you know, I say this and I'm going to say this each and every week because that's what our platform provides. You know, it's like we provide our listeners, you know, in society something, you know, they might have known, might have not have known existed behind these walls and gates, you know. And I'm not just referring to, like, transferable skills for employment. I mean, I am Reentry Robs. I'm always going to be pushing resources, education, you know. That's the only way we lead to, you know, any type of economical advancement. But I'm also talking about skills and talents such as authors, screenwriting, painters, musicians, you know, you name it. We possess it. You know, you just said it. But the only way that you are able to know that these things, that we possess these type of qualities, talents, skills, education, religious beliefs, is to actually hear it on LWAP or to view it on the Groves Hope Book. And take Brother L, for instance, Stace, you know, that we just interviewed. Success story. Do you agree?
Definitely.
Okay, so strategically, I'm, you know, obviously this was planned. We wanted our listeners to, you know, hear all about L and what he's been able to manage to achieve, you know, in his life, you know, but then we wanted to have L, you know, explain how, when, and where this whole journey started. And as crazy as this might sound, he wouldn't be the man he is today without prison.
Right.
It's crazy to say that. But I'm not telling nobody out there in States to, you know, say, book a trip to SCI Phoenix for an extended stay. Like, I'm not one of those people. I'm just saying that this is what true second chances look like.
You know, that's important to underline. This is about second chances.
Right. It's like,
It's not. Go ahead.
Obscurity. You know, like I say this all the time, obscurity hinders awareness.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
If you want to keep something a secret, you don't talk about it. You know what I'm saying? You don't tell no one. You don't expose it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, good luck on doing that, though, on our watch. You know what I mean? LWAP Radio and Groves Notebook, you know, will continue, you know, to educate the general public on exactly what many lifers or those with death by incarceration sentences are doing, you know, with their time. You know what I'm saying? And Stace, I want to I spoke to you about I'm going to give you another example of, you know, skills and hidden talents that we, you know, we have here behind bars.
Okay.
And I want to put Mr. Blackwell on, the brother Mr. Carol Blackwell that I was telling you about. So
okay.
On, so you can go ahead and speak to him.
Yes, go ahead.
Good morning. How you doing, Stacey?
Hi, Mr. Blackwell. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Doing pretty good.
I should say, can you tell us your first name?
Carol Blackwell. Carol, C-A-R-R-O-L-L.
Okay. Just because Rob introduced you as Mr. Blackwell, and I want to make sure your name gets out there.
Yeah, everybody call me B-Will.
They call you what?
Be Will, short for Blackwell.
Yeah. Be Will. I like
it. My stage name is Lizzie Blackwell.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, how long have you been incarcerated, sir? And how old are you?
I've been incarcerated since 1996. That would be 27 years in April this year. Now I'm 62 years old.
Okay. And apparently, Rob's been telling me a little bit that you're a bit of a musical genius.
Mm-hmm.
Any chance you'd like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, this is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Wait, say that again. We didn't hear that.
Yeah, I'm very, at a very young age, I had learned how to play instruments. And I learned that I was talented. I played a lot of instruments by ear, you know, the guitar, the keyboards, trumpet when I was younger. And all this was just in the flute. Yeah, the bongos, right? So, but when I was incarcerated at Greaterford, I joined the music program, and the music program, you know, it allowed me to learn the theory of music, to write chords and scales, and to write in 1, 2, and 3, and 4-part harmony. I ended up joining the jazz ensemble, playing the tenor saxophone for that program, and then I was seeked out to do frontman shows on the saxophone and playing cover songs with the band there, right? And we would play blues and jazz and R&B and rock and roll and classical music too, right? So this is a part of the how I extended my understanding of music by doing that. It was a rewarding experience for me, because I always played by ear when I was younger. It didn't go no further than that, but I see that it was a passion for me.
So can you just tell us, was this only at Greaterford, or did these groups and these opportunities continue at Phoenix?
Yeah, it's and at Greaterford, we joined a documentary called Songs in the Key of Free. And if you want to look that up, Songs in the Key of Free is on...
Songs in the Key of Free?
Right. It's a documentary. And you will see me and outside musicians and inside musicians writing compositions and everything, right, about music. And it's on Spotify, Apple Music, Twitter, Facebook, Amazon, and so forth.
Okay.
You'll see that documentary.
I'm going to check that out. Songs in the Key of Free. But then what about now at Phoenix? Do you have opportunities?
When we came over, I had an opportunity to play with the bands here on slot time that they give you over the holidays to entertain the inmates, you know, the general population and staff. And then Man Up, I got that chance and opportunity to play in Man Up with the band over there. But since then, we've been like in dormant. You know, we haven't had the opportunity since COVID hit, you know, to do anything too much. So that kind of slowed down, you know, that opportunity. But I still play on my own, and I still teach, you know, here in the yards over here and on the blocks, the music theory. And those who have instruments, who have keyboards, they want to learn how to play, so I teach them. That's as far as it goes, as far as me, sharing what I love to pass on to others.
Okay. So I'm just curious, real quick, do you get to keep a guitar in your cell?
Yes, we do. They have instruments. Some people have guitars, some people have keyboards, harmonicas, saxophones, and so forth. Yeah, whatever instrument of their choice.
Okay. So, we've waited in anticipation long enough. What do you have here for LWAP Radio today?
Well, I have this presentation that I wrote, and it's called For All, for LWAP. It goes like this. You want to hear it?
Of course.
Okay. Forgiveness and mercy for all. You're seeking forgiveness and mercy for all. You're listening to Life Without Parole Radio. So once again, we thank you for tuning in. Peace and blessings to all.
Yes.
So that's pretty much it. In a nutshell,
yes. Yeah. And you played that on guitar, right?
Yeah. Did you hear it?
We could hear it a little bit. We could hear a little bit, and it's
We're gonna have to.
Oh, we can hear the vocals, and it was a great tune. And I just want everyone who was listening to know that you were on guitar, and it's just probably hard to hold the phone up and get both your vocals and your guitar into the phone. So we're gonna have to work on that. Would you be willing to? What's that?
Excuse me. Go ahead.
I said, would you be willing to let us try that again sometime, and maybe we can record you and make that into an official LWAP radio jingle tune?
Sure, I would like that.
Okay.
But this receiver is not a quality receiver, you know, to receive vocals and guitar.
Right.
So it's a phone, you know, so you got to have a really quality type mic. So we got to really work with what we have here over the phone.
Right.
So you did you hear the voice and the guitar?
You could hear a little of the guitar. You could tell it was on the guitar, but really it was mainly your vocals that we got.
Okay.
They came through.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Carol Blackwell.
Sure. You're welcome. I appreciate this. I appreciate this opportunity to share with this program.
Yep.
Okay.
I wish I didn't have to cut you off so abruptly, but we only have a few minutes before the show is actually over.
Okay, here's Rob. Thank you.
Thank you for gracing us with your talent.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Take good care.
Talented brother, huh?
Yeah. We're going to work on it. We're going to work on figuring how to capture that so that we can get the guitar and get the vocals.
Where do you go on Spotify and you hear that songs would be free? When you hear that, like, he got the song on there, it just crushed me this morning. He played it out in the yard.
Songs in the Key of Free, I think it was called, right?
Yep.
Okay.
The song's called I Still Cry. So when you get a chance, definitely check that out. Everybody listening, definitely check it out. You know, this is what we're talking about.
You got to wrap up because we're at the end of the show.
Okay. And while listeners, I just wanted to, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I wanted to say that, you know, there are many layers, you know, to who we are as human beings, and one bad decision shouldn't define us forever. Facts and opinions, you know, they fill our world, you know, but the true person is still hidden underneath it. It's only when the true character of a person can be shared amongst the
world. You have 1 minute left.
That he or she could be known, loved, forgiven. And I think it was important, man, that, you know, that you know, we did this today, Stace, how we tied everything together, you know what I'm saying? And always expect the unexpected from me and Stace. Y'all already know that. So y'all already know, same place, same time, same fight. We got you, Rob, no rehearsals. Why? Because I live it. Peace and blessings to all. And tune in and miss out, you know? So Stace, great show. Hold us down. LWAP, listen to stay safe out there, man. And once again, peace and blessings to all. And I'll see y'all next week.
Bye, Rob. Enjoy your Friday.
Okay.
Everyone.
The caller has hung up.
Life Without Parole, you're listening to LWAP Radio. Thanks to FetLifeStation.com and to Lester Kinneon. Every Friday, 9 a.m. We'll see you next week.
My eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion. Endlessly, I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion. Endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different about me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on. I'm going home. Hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on.